Morning guys, Russ here, and I've got some exciting news for you all. Support from All Over Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. Get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped has just launched in the UK. And men have gone for years and years and years without having the right tools for the job. You can be one of the first men in the UK to experience their life-changing products. I know over the years I've struggled many times with personal grooming, shaving, creams, cutting yourself, all that sort of stuff. But none of that is a problem with the Manscaped redesigned electric trimmer. It features a cutting ceramic edge blade to reduce grooming accidents, 7,000 RPM motor, which enables it to work seamlessly through even the thickest of hair. So, go get rid of that bush, make it clean and tidy, and get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free delivery with MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will definitely thank you. Now it's time for Brian Habana.
Hi there, I'm Brian Habana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Codpast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Pods and the Google Store and all of those other podcatchers that you like to use. I'm joined this week. We've got a full house back together. So Ben, Phil and the Lensman are all here. Welcome, gentlemen.
You went Hello. Super posh there, Russ, at the start. Super Welcome posh. Along to the Mall Over Podcast.
Did I say podcast? Did I say podcast rather than podcast?
Yeah.
And then bath went, rather than
only,
bath.
We're the only podcast.
Oh, so I actually covered both bases, podcast and podcast. I didn't even realise I'd done that, mate. Although, as I was just saying, I have been playing golf and I've probably had at least three too many beers than I should have done. And cracked open a bottle of 2005 Cab Sav. So, yeah, there you go. Does that make me sound relatively
Why
posh?
Have you given us the year? Like, it makes absolutely any difference.
Well,
like I've got a 2005 Cab Sav that I bought from Tesco's for the low price of $7.99.
Well, no, I got...
Any time Russ has got 9 bottles of wine in the house.
I got given a crate of wine by my boss the other day, and it contained... an amount of bottles, all of this 2005... Sauvignon, and I must say it's an incredibly snazzy bouquet.
Does it smell of basil?
No. I'll have a bottle of Blue Nun. But before we get going, I want to both commend and thank Ben and Phil for last week. I dropped out late doors due to some ladies cricket coaching that I found myself involved in. And you boys were superb. Doug, I'm sure you'll agree. It was a very good listen and with an element of humour. I will call you both pussies to the question that who you most like to have a fight with. You know, I've got my own thoughts on that. But, you know, what was it? You wanted to have a fight with a sheep, Ben. And you were trying to goad Phil into having a fight with an alpaca?
Yeah, I think that's about fair.
Sam's,
you've got to pick your battles.
Fair summary, yeah.
So I shared something. I wanted to answer this question. And Doug, I don't know if you fancy answering this one as well in a minute when you've had a chance to have a quick think about it, given that I've given you no warning. But when I listened to the podcast last week, it made me want to join in. And I had a very, very nice time listening to you both slate and, you know, embrace me at the same time. It was like you were cuddling me whilst punching me in the back of the head. You know, can I shock you? I quite like Russ. which it did make me laugh. Anyway, going back to the fighting an animal question.
It's like saying you like James Haskell.
Well, we may or may not get onto that later on, given the amount of content scheduled for this week's podcast. But I will. I text you immediately as I was listening last Tuesday morning, potentially. And I'd quite like to have a fight with a kangaroo. Like a proper boxing match with a kangaroo. And it may well kick my ass. I can't remember whether I offered another animal. Oh, an ostrich. It was an ostrich or a kangaroo. And
now, I think you'd have more chance with a kangaroo. I reckon an ostrich would fuck you over quite quickly.
Ostriches are horrible.
They're limited with attacking weapons, aren't they, the ostrich?
Can't they disembowel a lion? Isn't that a thing?
Right, if the lion's dead, potentially.
Haven't they got, like, really sharp claws or something?
Well, they're not going to... But they've only got 2 feet on the ground, haven't they? So
it's their heads. It's the heads that they use. Heads as weapons.
Yeah. So if provided you can get yourself in a position where you're not being pecked to death by said ostrich. But I'd like the thought, and I shared a video, I don't know if anybody's ever seen this on YouTube, about the video of the guy who punches a kangaroo that had his dog in a headlock. Have you seen? You've seen it in the group, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd fancy, like, maybe not fancy my chances, but, like, as far as sport goes, it would be a hell of a watch, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think you're underestimating an alpaca when you're slating me here.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you both danced around the subject for a little bit.
Fuck is going on?
Finding animals. Finding animals that, like, basically you could both beat up, rather than answering the question that who you can have
you
a fight with.
You want to put
with.
That cab sav down, Russ. You're having a laugh, mate. Giving up. Can I just say, talk about punching alpacas.
A frightened ostrich can achieve a speed of 45 miles per hour. If cornered, it can deliver dangerous kicks capable of killing lions and other large predators.
I'm not chasing it.
Shock.
It wouldn't be much of a chase, would it?
No, it wouldn't. Absolutely would not.
Have you ever heard
that Simpsons episode where he's on the treadmill?
It would be more like one of those Scooby-Doo episodes where they just run past the same background again and again and again.
Have you ever heard of the Great Emu War?
No, I have not.
So, after World War One,
but there's tonight's podcast title.
After World War One, the emus in the outback of Australia got out of control because all the men were away from Australia doing wars and that. And when they got back, they got trucks with machine guns to go and sort out the emus that were eating all the crops. But they found that emus are surprisingly clever, and they pretty much outsmarted the Australian army.
I bet Rod Hull was fuming. Fuck that night straight away. Fuck. Sorry about that. Anyway, is this allegedly some kind of rugby podcast?
You tell us.
Well, you're in charge.
Well, you say I'm in charge after the job that you did last week, Ben. Yeah, I think it's only fair that you take the reins.
Like the last, very last minute.
No, I'm only joking. I'm only joking.
George described last week as less angry.
Was that an official? Can we put that on our banner for Edinburgh Festival?
Yeah,
Ben's in charge. Less angry.
I'm not sure we're selling out much at Edinburgh Festival. Let's be honest.
I mean, not
unless we bring the kangaroo.
Mate, I think we're funnier than most rugby-based podcasts, given that there are about 500 now. Although, having said that, a load have just fallen by the wayside, and yet here we are still.
Sorry, is that our new tagline? Funnier and less angry than some rugby podcasts.
not fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, still plugging away. Right. Anyway, let's talk.
Average
let's talk
but
about
persistent.
Yeah, let's talk about some rugby, shall we? Friday night It's a Premiership weekend. Friday night saw the best two teams in the Premiership go head-to-head. Some people will say it's not Bristol's full-strength squad. Rajendra, Sheedy, and a couple of... There was one more who doesn't spring to mind. Nathan Hughes. But what I would say is, watching that game on Friday night, those two teams, stroke squads, are by far the best two teams in the Premiership. And I think that demonstrated it on Friday, didn't it, Phil?
Yeah, definitely. For a start, it was an entertaining game of rugby. That's always a bonus. But you had two teams that executed really well for pretty much everything that they did. And that's always nice to see. I mean, it's we could spend probably an hour talking about some of the dross on Saturday with poor execution and poor skills and really high scoring games as a result. And ultimately, that's not what we're here for. It was great. It was a great rugby match. And also, it was really good to see pitting of the two different styles against each other, and fairly similar to Sunday's game, but you've got the kind of free-flowing, keep the ball alive, less pattern-orientated approach of Bristol, and then you've got the Exeter, who they play to a pattern. They're very well drilled. I mean, ultimately, their first try came off the back of a set play. But equally, they can be quite fluid and expansive, particularly on turnover ball or on kick returns. But you got the two contrasting styles, and it just led to a really entertaining match. And I think that's really the key point, that and the fact that Exeter won, the two key points.
Doug, what were your thoughts on Bristol Exeter Friday night?
You don't really... There's not a lot more to say than it was the two best teams, both going at it, and it was a great game. Andy Urin, I thought, had a pretty good game. He's usually...
Why is he not talked about in any kind of international... Is Andy Urin English?
Before you interrupted me, I was about to say, because he's usually good for a calamity or two a game.
Is he, though?
He's a bit of a liability, Russ. He's a bit of a... Who was the old... Was it Cook, the old Bath scrum half?
Oh, yeah.
Who looked like he should have been brilliant, but actually was just a trappy gobshite who put 75% of his box kicks into the third row of the stand. Andy Urin is not on that level, but he's good for a knock on at a critical moment from the base of a ruck, or, you know, passing the ball 10 feet over someone's head. But I thought he was pretty good. It seemed to me like Exeter had the majority of that game, though, and had it fairly well in hand. And anyone that says, oh, well, Bristol were this and that, they were missing these people, like every team misses players. You know, there's people that are out at Saints that we could do with. I just don't think in rugby it's a valid argument, because everyone suffers injuries.
I don't think it's a valid argument.
I think will happen, though, is if these two do meet in a final, there will be an adjustment from Exeter, from Bristol, because that coaching setup is good enough to be able to do that.
And what do you think that adjustment will be then? Because if you look
be harder
in what respect?
In the respect of, I think there has to be a bit more pragmatism from Bristol. They have to potentially realise that while they do have a great system and it's good for 90% of teams that they'll face, it's not good enough against the big teams that can outmuscle them and deny them the ball and the space that they need. I think that they may have to play a slightly more aggressive game and a slightly more pragmatic game.
It's interesting you say that. Sorry, Phil. Like, in the last 3 weeks, was it Bordeaux that beat Bristol? by kind of allowing them to make their own mistakes and turn them over when they got themselves isolated. And I think there's a lot of Premiership clubs that haven't got the skill or the ability to either keep up with Bristol when they're throwing it about and or isolate them properly, which Exeter absolutely did. I mean, Bordeaux did it a few weeks ago when they beat them in the Champions Cup. But Exeter did that. And there was a spell during the game that there were turnovers going left, right and centre. And it all came through really, really good counter-rucking, but proper rucking. Like, through the middle, drive over the ball, look at an opportunity and seize the opportunity to drive through the ball. Do you think, Phil, a lot of teams are not scared, but like don't utilise that tactic when they see that opportunity? Because how often do you see teams drive the opposition off the ball on a full counter-ruck? I reckon we've seen as many pure counter-rucks in that game on Friday night as I've seen for the last 6 months.
Yeah, so Exeter have never really had a jackler. Even when they had, what's his name there, Matt Kvesic, who can play that role really well, he wasn't allowed to play that role because it didn't really suit their system. Their system isn't based on jackling. Well, if you take a jackler out of the equation, you've then only got two options. One is you let them have the ball, or the other one is you go for the counter ruck. And what Exeter did, they've always been really good at not overcommitting to those rucks. As soon as that ball's down, generally there's the tackler involved and that's it, and everybody else is on their feet, which is why their defence is so hard to break down. But they do seem to be building this kind of counter-rucking game into it a bit more. And certainly as teams, when they learn that you're going to step off and you're not necessarily going to jackal, they'll then undercommit to securing that ball as well, and they'll only stick one pair of hands in, and two or three people like Jacques Vermeulen hitting one person over the ball, they're going to clear them out every time. The jackals that did come in that game, pretty much all of them came from Dan Thomas, who I think is a phenomenal athlete and a really great flanker. But actually, I went super posh there with my butt as well. Actually, if you look at the difference between the two teams, Doug's highlighted it perfectly, actually. It wasn't that Bristol's defence was poor necessarily. The back row put in a hell of a lot of good work, some good tackles. The three tries that Exeter scored, they came from a turnover, from a good bit of back play, and then two of them from grinding it up from about 5 yards out. And they'll score tries like that all day long. But they only scored 20 points. The difference is that Bristol only scored 12 because their attack weren't allowed the space to proliferate because Exeter are not overcommitting. And then when they do commit, they get the turnover. I don't think I saw it once where Exeter tried to counter ruck and weren't successful. And that's the key to it, is identifying your opportunities.
Yeah, well, it's pointless trying to counter ruck if you're not going to be successful, because you're going to commit men to a breakdown that will undoubtedly leave space elsewhere. I mean, if you look at that year-end try, Bristol ran that ball from a turnover on set piece ball from Exeter, and basically went the length of the field. Piatow, Adeoluken, who I thought for the most part this season I've been quite impressed with that Adeoluken, and I know he's been in and out with Nualago, who has been their main guy, but I thought Jack Noel, other than that, maybe that one period in passage of play, played him perfectly. Literally paid him off the park. And that's where you look at where maybe someone like Nualago for Bristol would have made a difference, because Tom O'Flaherty doesn't strike me. When you look at him, he looks like your stereotypical jinky winger, your elusive winger. But the yards after contact that him and Noel consistently made on Friday night, and Tommy Flaherty does that a lot. I don't know whether he deceives people, whether people underestimate him, but I mean, the amount of of yards he gains through the tackle is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, you see a lot of wingers, they take that initial contact and they go immediately to ground. It's not what Exeter do. And that can't be an exclusive thing to Exeter, but it's puzzling, like, whether people underestimate him because he's been around long enough now for people to know what it is he's trying to achieve. And
he's fairly strong in the contact. I think that's all it is, that you get some of these guys, like, I suppose Louis Rees-Sammet can be a bit like it, Caden Murley, people like that, where they get a bit of contact and they drop and they're just not physically strong enough in that contact. And I think he's just that bit stockier and stronger. But yeah, I suppose just to finish my point about the how well Exeter defended them off the park, got Piers O'Connor, who's been phenomenal all season. I actually can't remember hearing his name in commentary. He was shepherded out of the game. The ball never really got to him.
Yeah, they missed him out a lot. And he did make some sort of, not line breaks, but he did make some good punching holes. But, you know, that first half really belonged to Sam Simmons, didn't it? In front of Warren Gatland in the stands. I'm not convinced that he, you know, as a Lions tourist, maybe, definitely not a test match player. But, you know, Sam Simmons, the acceleration, they put Ugo Monya. Did you see where Ugo Monya tried to put the Sam Simmons miles per hour on the coverage? And he said, oh, he got up to 21 miles per hour, whatever it was, and this is a number 8. I know I've said this before, and I'm not the only one to say it. Sam Simmons could be the ultimate 12.
Yeah.
Couldn't he, like... Is there a part of it that's kind of stifled in the back row when it comes to picking and going because he's not got the Vunipola or Hughes or Vermeulen, and that's Dwayne rather than Jack? Like that ability to carry hard first up. Imagine him coming off of that 12 channel, a bit like a fast Esterhazen.
Is he fast enough laterally to defend a 12 channel at set piece, though?
Oh, I undoubtedly.
Because that's where I think it falls down.
I don't think it's as easy as that, Russ. I think Doug's absolutely right.
You reckon? You think he can't move sideways to a point where he's going to make a tackle, yet he's a back row forward that can...
No, but it's not just about the moving sideways, is it? It's about... The knowledge of the... You can't just say, you know, it's why...
It's about relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's why matey boy, the rugby league player...
Tompkins. Not Tompkins.
No.
Burgess.
You know, Burgess, yeah. It's why he was able to... You can tell an out-and-out athlete the size of Sam Burgess to go and chase the ball around the park and try and win it at Jackals and carry hard, but you can't put him in at 12 and say, right, just carry hard, mate, because 12's, you know, the hardest position on the field defensively. So
correct.
If you don't have a...
Do you not think, though, just to counter what you're saying there, obviously with Sam Burgess, it was a completely different kettle of fish because he was coming from a different sport entirely. I think the rugby intelligence that Sam Simmons has would enable him, with enough minutes, enough training sessions and stuff, to play that role based on the fact that he's played rugby union.
Do you not think if that was a goer, Rob Baxter might have thought of it?
That's true, but they've arguably the most underrated 12 in the Premiership, I think.
I think if Sam Simmons is 21 and Exeter don't have the right kind of player to play 12, or even Sam Simmons is 19, then they might have a word and go, give this a go and see what you think. I wouldn't want to stick him in now. In fact, I'd coming to Russ's point, as in, does he miss a bit with that kind of whole hard first up carry? I could see him, if you've got somebody like... probably somebody like a Faletau. I wouldn't want somebody who's or a super fit Billy, but not a Billy as he currently is. Maybe somebody like a CJ Stander. I could see him playing six with them, and then a really mobile seven. I wouldn't want to stick him in the centres necessarily, but I do think that there's a bit. He gets away with quite a lot at eight because he's got for Exeter, because he's got some absolute units on the flank.
And that's, but it's not. They're not just on the flank, are they? Like Johnny Hill and Johnny Gray, Sam Skinner played at six on Friday night, and then you would have
got Vermeulen.
I'm going to come on to Jacques Vermeulen in a minute.
Russ, like Janice Kirsten. If it was a game that was. The level of rugby that we played at, you could put a really good eight at 12 and he's going to boss it because he's going to carry through their defence. Probably got good enough ball skills to get away with it.
Your brother is a prime example of that.
Yeah, could easily play 12 at the level he can play.
Does he still listen? Because I don't want him listening to that.
I don't think he does, to be honest.
A good eight or a good six and a good 12 are pretty much interchangeable up to national one, national two.
Yeah, up to professionalism. Once you get to professionalism, then it just isn't possible. There are you could get away with at lower level rugby a 12 that just crashes up every time, and up to a certain point that will work if he's good enough at crashing it up. But if you look at any international side, you don't have that type of 12 anymore. They have to defend.
You got Bastrow that went the other way.
Yeah. I suppose my point is, though, Ben, is that that isn't Simmons' game. He isn't just a straight running crash ball eight like that. You would think, oh, well, we'll just stick him in there and he will just punch holes. He runs at gaps as opposed to a lot of forwards that run at people.
I think he's got the skills. I think he's got the rugby awareness. I think what he doesn't have is the experience. I think it would take him too long. It would take him 18 months probably to get to that position where you'd see the best of him, and rugby careers are too short to do that.
Do you not think it would take longer than that? Do you not think it would take four or five years?
I think at 18 months he would make fewer mistakes. I think at 18 months he would do, I wouldn't say he'd be perfect. I don't know. I've not been in a professional rugby environment for long enough to know.
I think the Sam Simmons bandwagon is over the top anyway. I mean, I think he's a fantastic player, but I don't think he makes the England back row, never mind a Lions back row. You know, you'd have to leave. To take Simmons, you would have to leave someone like Tipperich behind, and that's just not going to happen. But by the time you take...
Simmons' biggest weakness is he doesn't fit into a traditional shoehorn of a position.
And that's the problem. When you look at it, I mean, you've just got to put it against that Leinster back row of, who was it, Conan, Van der Fleer and Ruddock on that day a couple of weeks ago, and Simmons looked anonymous. And by no means am I crashing the Simmons for the Lions bandwagon. I just think, you know, what he does is different to what a lot of other people do, which is probably why Eddie Jones doesn't pick him, because Exeter play with two big flankers. It allows him to do less of the grunt work, should we say, and pop up in these spaces. And that is that, you know, that is game plan specific, isn't it? But you know, it's taken away from like Friday night, which was, you know, the try that O'Flaherty scored off the back of that Simmons break, which was first phase ball off a line out. And you've got to question Bristol's defence a little bit there, haven't you? I mean, I think Bedloe bit in on Devoto or Slade, and Simmons came round the back.
And in that situation, when you've got Devoto, Slade and Simmons and an equal number of defenders, you know you're going to be in trouble straight away, don't you, Phil? No, okay, no problem.
You picked on me because you could see that I was busy texting.
Yes, exactly.
Damn you.
And that you watched it.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know. It's one of those things where we could ultimately criticise every single little thing that was done slightly wrong. So I think it was O'Flaherty overcommitted for Urine and didn't make the tackle and then allowed him to get back to his feet and keep going forward to score the try. Let's go back to what we originally said. It was the two best teams playing well. It was a cracking game of rugby. Bristol, I think, are a long way along the journey that they're going to come along. But when they come up against tough sides and really tough sides, and I think it's really quite hard to overemphasize how tough Exeter are to play against. I mean, having chatted to some of the Saracens guys after they came down to the Chiefs a couple of seasons ago, they were broken people afterwards. And Bristol do have a weakness when they come up against these really tough sides. So
I was just about to say, they are going to get a reputation for being soft if they don't get a win in one of these games.
Not soft like Worcester soft, but soft. Yeah.
Flat track bullies.
Yeah.
Could Bristol be currently construed as flat track bullies? Until they... I mean, they beat Exeter a couple of seasons ago at Sandy Park, didn't they? They have beaten...
They strike me as like Wasps of old, Wasps of the sort of Cipriani era, in that on a given day, they would, you know, if everything went that way, their way, they can beat you and score some sort of world-class tries. But if you keep your act together and sort of punch them in the gut, then they don't quite have the substance yet. I think
there are a lot of parallels actually with the Wasps game, in that it was a team playing more controlled, more physical rugby against one player more free flowing. The problem was that in that game, the execution from the more controlled side wasn't quite as good. Plus, the refereeing decision that I'm sure we'll come on to.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember when Exeter sort of pushed their way into being the sort of second best team in the country, there was a perhaps 2 or 3 year period where every time they played Saracens, they got whacked.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Bristol are at the moment. I mentioned Lloyd had sort of given me a quick summary of the game, and that's his point as well. They're 3 years away from coming up. They've probably still got a couple of years to go before sort of everything sort of bears fruit. You know, he was of the opinion that Bristol kind of, their line out failed and their sort of ruck defence failed. So they sort of gave Exeter a way in. But I guess that is partly to do with a little bit of inexperience in big games and partly to do with the fact that Exeter beat them up a little bit.
Yeah, and there was a real thing around discipline, wasn't there, in that first half? Exeter didn't concede a penalty in that first half, which in the grand scheme of things is massive. And you don't see many teams in any half of rugby not concede a single penalty. And that would have made, you know, you don't concede penalties, you don't concede territory. You don't concede territory, you're not necessarily under pressure. And then they made Bristol do everything from deep. And they made them try to run everything and they managed to stifle it. And, you know, Bristol have shown themselves to be a very good team, even like the catch and drive. You know, their catch and drive game, and you look at Capon and Brian Byrne, they've probably got as many tries as any other Bristol player this season through that catch and drive game. But Exeter didn't give them anything. And what I thought Exeter did on Friday, without sort of seeming to have any Exeter sort of bias, which there's obviously going to be, is I thought Exeter gave Bristol a little bit of a lesson on Friday. just a lesson in potentially control and how to win a game of rugby, rather than, you know, you're not just going to fling it about and run it all over us. When you isolate yourselves, we're going to counter-ruck you. When you try and keep it close, we're gonna front up and we're gonna knock you back. And everything Bristol tried literally kind of fell away. And that to me is game management. Now, you know, as we've already mentioned, these are the best two teams in the league. And bar a poor result for either of these teams in a home semi-final, you know, we could be seeing both these teams at Twickenham at the end of June in the Premiership final. Doug?
Yeah.
That's what I love about this. That's what I love about this podcast is that you can ask a question or you can just fling a name out and just get a one-word answer.
I mean, what more do I already said that.
All right. Well, it's fine. Should we move on?
Work on your presentation, son.
All right. Ben, have you got any advice?
It would take a minor miracle for anyone to beat them.
Yeah.
Either of them.
They're both going to be at home in the semi-finals, and it will take a monumental effort from whoever plays against them in the semi-finals, which is probably a more interesting chat than any other chat in the Premiership right now, isn't it? Because, like, there are a few teams all vying for those two spots.
Yeah, but look at the teams that are vying for those spots. It's Northampton, Harlequins and Sale. And Sale are, you remember Crocodile Northern. Dundee?
Yeah.
Like a South African version of that.
Do you remember Donk from Crocodile Dundee?
I don't.
I don't need a gun, mate. Yeah. I've got a Donk. And it's just this massive, massive Australian moron who just smacks the Colombian guy in the face.
That's Sale.
They have no, that, you know, Bristol and Mick Dundee. No. So Sale or Donk. And then Bristol would be like, who's the, you know, the Aborigine guy that helps Mick out because he's got loads of tricks, quite wiry, you know. And then I think that Exeter and Mick Dundee, because they can do everything well, they come from quite far away. And then Northampton are... Wally
and Worcester are the cow that lies down in the middle of the road.
Yeah,
when he walks up to it and he goes, gets it to lie down.
Exactly.
Chris Boyd said this at the start of last season.
For player welfare, let's just sack off all the other games and just play Exeter against Saracens at Twickenham.
We did say that.
Yeah. There's no point in playing these semi-finals. Whoever gets through to play Exeter and Bristol are going to have, they're going to have one up the chutney with no goose fat, aren't they?
One up the chutney with no goose fat. Loved it. Love it. Doug, you were at one of your favourite places on Saturday. Let's move on swiftly. I know you're a big fan of Worcester and all that they come to stand for this season. But they did put up a bit of a fight on Saturday, did they not? Was it not strange to see from your experience this season?
But again, like, they put up a bit of a fight. Where's that been for the last 6 weeks? And they put up against a team who are so one-dimensional that it's practically laughable. I'm trying to say this without, you know, there is no nuance to Sale. They literally...
Well, they've got a big pack of South African forwards and Van Rensburg at 12.
He didn't.
Good luck.
No, they had a young lad at 12, actually, and one of the James brothers, Sam, I think. Or was the young lad at 13? Either way, they basically just punch you in the face, and then you either fall over and capitulate, or you punch them back in the face. And Worcester managed to keep punching them back long enough to stay in the game. The scoreline flattered Worcester, really, because they were down and out, basically, with 10 minutes to go. And then, for some reason, Sale would score, kick off to Worcester, and Worcester would just run all the way back and score a try. Like, from nowhere. I don't like watching Sale. I think they're boring. I think they're... Well, you know what I think of their coach. I think that they're making a mockery of the South African situation. They claim to have a world-class academy, but they're littered with imports and old-timers. Worcester are fundamentally a joke, and it's a shame. I can't remember if, because we didn't podcast last week, did I send a text message that said that basically Worcester are London Welsh?
Yes, you did.
Sorry?
You did, and you put it in the Twitter group as well, but yes.
Yeah, and apparently Egg Chasers have pissed on my chips there and nicked it before I got it out on...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, before you got it into the wider audience, but...
Yeah, and it's a fact. They are the worst team I've ever seen in the Premiership. Bar none. And I don't know about you lads, but I'm getting really annoyed with management speak coaches turning up at interviews at the end of games, talking about journeys and introspection and how it's not, you know, there's more to life than rugby. No, when you're a DOR of a Premiership rugby club, there should not be more to life than rugby. It's your one thing that you need to do. Do it well.
And we've been pretty critical of Stuart Hooper over the last 18 months or so. To be fair to him, he's been pretty critical of himself and of the performances as well. And he's relatively refreshing that he comes out with a lot less management speak than a lot of them. But you're right, they come up and they it's becoming a bit kind of football Premier League management.
It's just also contrived, isn't it?
Yeah. On the Sale point, they have just signed that young English centre who's quite fleet of foot and not known for smashing up the middle. Re-signed him. He was there on loan, wasn't he? That to a Langy chap who's gonna really change their mould, isn't he?
If and when he ever gets fit and plays more than three games on the bounce.
Exactly. What do we think about this Worcester Wasps thing? So,
yeah.
Whichever weekend it is, 25th of May or something like that, or
16th
of May, and they're supposed to be playing on the 15th, and on the 17th, crowds are allowed in. So Wasps have requested to push it back a week into what would be a rest week, and Worcester have said no because it's important that the players have scheduled rests, even although they can't really do anything in that week. So the rest of their season goes two games rest week, three games, and instead we'll go three games rest week, two games.
I just think it's bullshit that if you can delay a game, I see the Bristol game at home and is it Sale at home that weekend? Have been delayed. They've been delayed to the Monday evening anyway, which is
Newcastle have switched to Monday evening.
Fans can be allowed in. Now, if you were scheduled to be playing on the Friday night following, I don't know what the schedule looks like for that next weekend.
It's European final weekend,
Bath and Leicester and the only people that would be potentially impacted by that. Why wouldn't anybody, any club ever, agree to move to a Monday and allow fans in any stadium?
It speaks to a wider issue for me, in that the sort of rigidity and lack of forward thinking among these clubs has been stark over the last year. In a time when they could have saturated the market with Premiership rugby, they stuck to the status quo and played games on Saturday at 3 o'clock. You look at the Premiership, they've got four games on a Saturday, four games on a Sunday. They're staggered kickoff so that you can watch every single one. Why are the Premiership playing three games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday? When literally nobody can go to these games. You could have the eyes of every single Premiership rugby fan glued to a screen for 7 hours a day.
And also behind the fucking red button on BT Sport.
Because let's not forget, Bristol refused to move a kickoff time with Newcastle because Pat Lam thought it would affect the players. You know, there's just a stunning lack of thought. I mean, you've taken season ticket money off people. You've asked people to buy new replica kits. You've done X, Y, Z. We'll get on to replica kits, by the way. It's just... The naivety is just mind-boggling. We could have been playing games.
I don't think it's naivety, mate.
We could have been playing games two on a Thursday, two on a Friday, two on a Saturday, or two Friday, two Saturday, two Sunday, 5 and 7 o'clock kickoffs, or 3 and 5 o'clock kickoffs. But instead, we've got three games on a Saturday. You've got to pick which one you want to watch. It's bonkers. And sadly, it's not surprising.
What gives you any indication that anybody associated with Premiership Rugby or the RFU actually has an idea about what the common person thinks about?
Yeah. I mean, look, why are the Premiership Why are the Premiership allowing Worcester to say no?
It's happened time and time again. The Premiership have just shown that they do not understand that they are an entertainment business, and that entertainment relies upon having a public who are willing to pay the money and get engaged. I mean, there was a thread on Twitter about football with the whole European Super League thing, and saying, because the chap from Real Madrid has come out and said that 16 to 24 year olds don't want to come and watch football, they'd rather play Fortnite or whatever. And this chap's gone out and said, well, when I was 18, I used to watch a couple of football matches a week, and I did because they were on telly, and now they're behind paywalls. 16 to 24 year olds don't get to watch it. Well, that's one stage. You take it to the next stage and you stick all the games in the middle of the afternoon on a Saturday when people are out doing stuff and nobody's going to want to watch them. And they're the people in 10 years' time who will be paying your subscriptions. And they're not going to, because they'll be engaged in football or something else, because there is visibility of it. I mean, it's just an ultimate kind of smash your head against the wall kind of moment. I mean, they could have
100 ball cricket.
There's six games a week. They could have those games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And just with a bit of clever scheduling so that nobody's ever got shorter than a 6 day turnaround or a 5 day turnaround. Sometimes it's a bit longer. They could have a game on every evening if they wanted.
That's what Premier League football did, isn't it? Yes, yeah, there's a difference in turnaround.
Premiership Rugby and the RFU want the Premiership to be that, like, their holy grail is the NFL. It's this ring fence competition where money just gets shit through TVs into their faces and they buy luxury suites and huge stands and God knows what else. Unfortunately, what they don't seem to understand, at least, is that the reason the NFL is like that is because the NFL tells them what the fuck they're going to do. Now, it's all set up for the owners, but the NFL controls the product. And if they say we're having games on a Thursday night, fuck me, we're having games on a Thursday night. They don't get Alan Solomon saying, some of the players have booked holidays. Where, by the way, because that's one of the big arguments on Twitter that I've seen. All these players have got holidays booked and they're going to go and see their families. Do you know what? Go and see your family on Tuesday. Because you're not going on holiday, because no cunt's going on holiday.
Go on holiday and come back, spend 2 weeks in isolation and miss the end of the season.
I don't think you'll find a rugby fan in the land that would be pissed off if there were games on...
Can I shock you?
Go on.
Check Twitter.
Well, like here,
you said rugby fans.
Rugby fans. If there was a game, if there was a Premiership game of rugby on a Thursday night, a Friday night, two on a Saturday, and two, one on a Sunday, and one on a Monday night, there would be no objections. That's what's that? Six games. There's your 12 teams.
They've got
6 games. Everyone live, prime time. In a slot with a 7:45 kickoff, fan when the fans can go back, that's after work as well, so people
Mate,
can go after
got
work.
6 games a week.
Six games, and you can schedule it so you're not going to be playing on a Thursday, and then you know, or you play on a Thursday, or you wouldn't play on a Monday, and then on a Thursday, you know, you could stagger the scheduling. It's not difficult to do.
How the club can be so short-sighted to their audience, because, and from what I understand, no away fans are allowed, which is why a mitigating factor as to why Worcester have said no. But so what, man? It's like, do the right thing. Do the right thing and let some people watch some rugby.
Do the right thing for everybody, not just you, because you're an absolute shit show.
Are they worried that 2,000 fans in the Rico are going to add a massive atmosphere? 30,000 fans in the Rico add no atmosphere. Soulless rugby stadium.
You ain't going to get 30,000 fans for a Wasp game as long as you've got a hole in your ass.
Well, I was going to say, I'd have to be bedridden to watch that game on the television. So I'm not really that fussed what day they play it on.
It just, like, what I don't understand is that it's the bloody mindedness. It's like, well, I bet you if that was a Worcester home game against Wasps, they'd be all over it like a fucking
playing ships. Playing devil's advocate, if you had games on a Thursday and games on a Monday, bearing in mind two teams would play on each of those days, would it make scheduling that difficult?
You don't need to do it on a Monday and Thursday.
No,
this would be a one-off.
Three on a Saturday, like in the Six Nations.
You do 2, 4, and 6 o'clock kickoffs.
Mm.
But they could do that every week.
Yeah, of course they could.
Or if they were, well, yeah, a game on a Friday night, 3 games on a Saturday, and 2 staggered on a Sunday.
Yeah,
away you go. No problem. All games televised. None of it behind the fucking red button where you've got to search 3 red button options and choose between games. What's the point? Just have every single game. Like, if BT...
Well, there's bandwidth issues for that because BT's run BT TV's run on down the internet, isn't it? So there's only so many live feeds that they can send out on their bandwidth.
Yeah, but if they had the channel, instead of showing
who's
fucking...
BT, instead who own of... the internet in this country.
They wouldn't need to because they'd be on one after another, so you could have them on the same channel.
That's my point. The BT Sport have got 3 channels. So instead of showing fucking German football or reruns of MotoGP on BT Sport 3, why not make Sunday afternoon fucking Premiership Rugby afternoon, Saturday afternoon, BT Sport 3 is Premiership.
When Sky had the Premiership and the European Cup, especially European Cup weekends, there'd be a Challenge Cup on a Thursday and then you'd have 4 games. There'd be Challenge Cup Thursday, there'd be at least 1 game on a Friday night, probably 1 on the red button as well. And then you'd have 4 games Saturday and 4 games Sunday. Every round of the Championship, the European Cup. And I think the Premiership was Saturday, Sunday, a game each, but that was back in the day before BT came in and did the 3 games a week thing. They're never going to sort their shit out. It's just never going to happen. The product could be so much better than it is, but it's just never going to happen.
It's CVC, Premiership Rugby, PRL.
Mate, it's not that. It's not the TV companies. It's not the media department at Prem Rugby, it's the self-servingness nature of the teams that is blocking this.
It's the fact that Premiership rugby is owned in the majority by the teams and not by a central organisation that has a role to play in the bigger picture.
And one of the major teams that's involved. And I suppose that's been the problem all along, isn't it? That of the 12 teams in the Premiership, there's always one that's in the Championship. So there's 13 teams that are all part of the Premiership and one of them always isn't in it.
Well, I think Doug hit on it. They're looking at the NFL and the money the NFL makes as a TV company and as owners of businesses. And they're going, we could be that. But they couldn't because we're not America. And we have football and angling and various other things that people like to do more than rugby. It's a niche is a bit strong, but it's not the number one sport in this country. And it never will be.
The other problem they have is that reruns of MotoGP and German football get more viewers live than Premiership Rugby.
Which is fucking mental, isn't it?
But really, that is because the game isn't marketed correctly.
It's also because the game... It's a chicken and egg thing, though, isn't it? Is it not a chicken and egg scenario where they don't have all the games live and on the mainstream channels? So until they do, they don't really know.
It's also because the games are on at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. It's very rare that 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, I'm going to go and watch telly. 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, probably am thinking that. I don't know. I just think, and actually, if you look at rugby as a sport, most people 20 to 30 who like rugby at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon will be on the pitch. Or
exactly. We've said that so many times. But it's just, I don't know, is it an old men in suits thing? Is it people who think that you know, they've grown the league to what it is now, so they must be doing something right? I mean,
maybe they should rename tries to dot downs and invite a different audience.
Rename tries to goals, TMO to VAR, and they might be onto something.
I don't want to talk about VAR. I don't want to mention it. Because VAR actually isn't that bad. It's the absolute fucking monumental spunk buckets that are operating it.
It's a fucking camera. It can't be that bad.
It's not even that. The monumental spunk buckets that are operating it, mate, are 18-year-old kids that wear their university cricket shorts to OBs. I've seen them all.
Mate. Yeah, no, not the operators. It's the fact that you've got a Premier League referee, I don't even know all their names, but let's say John Moss, because I know his name. John Moss is the referee on the pitch. And then you've got one of his good mates, Andre Mariner, who is also another Premier League referee, on the VAR, who doesn't want to make John Moss look like a cunt. So instead of arriving at the correct decision, he just backs up his mate that's already made a shit decision. And then
Spurs game, though, right?
Which one?
The Man United.
I mean, the whole thing.
With the goal that was disallowed.
Because, oh, mate, it's fucking ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But that's the point, right? The VAR wasn't at fault, right? The video stuff should never have even been brought into that particular scenario. But the guy who was the video assistant referee, the person behind the technology, says, oh, I think you should have a look at that. And then the other person who was in charge had a look at it and went, oh, yeah, that looks a little bit handy to the face. Let's blow it up. That's two people making a decision that should never have been made. That's not the technology's fault. That's the people's fault. And that is the problem. It's the people.
If we're going to batter VAR as well, they draw lines with a level of accuracy of up to 0.01 of a millimetre based on cameras that are not directly perpendicular to what they're trying to see. And the level of accuracy with which they draw the lines is far higher than the level of accuracy that can actually be achieved.
It's a fucking joke. I don't want to get into it because it makes me angry, and it's worse. And at least with rugby, you know, again, we've had this decision, this discussion many times, where you have touch judges getting involved with some referees and not others. You have some TMOs whispering over the waves while the match is going on, and others you don't hear from until they're implicitly asked. Like, there should be a standard. It should be an absolute standard, like, set procedure where everybody follows. So you don't have Rowan Kitt just chiming in to fucking Luke Pierce's
touch judges.
I don't think Ian Tempest made a decision in the match. I don't think he made a single decision. His touch judges and the TMO made every single one of them. All he was there to do was to repeat what they'd said.
Yeah. It's when touch judges who are actually official referees, you know, so when you get like
Craig Maxwell Keys on touch
on the touchline. Yes. Blue. Craig, fuck off, mate.
Shut up. Busy cunts.
Yeah. They're all official referees.
Anyway, right, we got to an hour. We haven't even got to Bath Wasps. I'm not even entirely sure what we've talked about for the last 45 minutes.
I watched the highlights of that 400 times and I still couldn't see what the guy got sent off for.
Urbano. Yeah, let's talk about it then. Well, Ben, you're a Bath fan. You should come in here. First of all, what did you think about the game? I didn't see it, but what did you think about
it? From what I've heard, it wasn't as good a game as Exeter against Bristol.
But it wouldn't be. There's two shit teams.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I thought Wasps had by far the better of the first half. Bath probably had the better of the second half. Wasps scored a couple of really good tries. But Bath kind of started to get the measure of them and were beating them up front. They're a bit extra like getting close to the line and scoring. And then the red card kind of ended the game, really, because, you know, it was inevitable then that Wasps were going to score. I'm just going to leave this here, okay, right? I understand the concept that under the modern laws that is a red card, or it's running the risk of a red card. But I can't. The rugby person in me just doesn't think it should be a red card. So it's not the referee's fault, or the video referee's fault that they've had to send him off. But he's just got a tackle wrong and they've clashed heads. It's just an accident. And I just don't see what we're gaining from that. Because the deterrent of the red card surely is to stop him doing it on purpose. So I
95% agree with you. What they would say is the whole deterrent is to try and get them to bend more at the hips and get their heads lower so that they're not at the head area. But that's horseshit as far as I'm concerned. The bit where I disagree with you is I actually don't think the refs got it right in terms of Ian Tempest very quickly went, okay, I've got a head on head and it's with force. Was it really with force? Did Urbano put force into that collision? Well, he was hardly moving at speed and he didn't move his head forwards into it. It was a ricochet off the initial hit, very similar to the Thorley one, which was it was a ricochet that then led to a head-to-head collision. Now, to me, that should be enough mitigation. It should drop down to a yellow. But yeah, it's just not what you want rugby to be about. Because I actually think it was a really good game. I really enjoyed watching it as a game.
The second half was a lot better than the first half. I thought the first half was a little bit mistake ridden, but
I think Tempest didn't understand anything about what was going on in the scrum, so he just went two to Wasps, then two to Bath on the penalties. But it ruined it as a game.
I think they're just looking for red cards now.
Do you reckon they're on a bonus?
I mean, at the end of the day, if it had been a yellow card at that point of the game, it has the same result in terms of the result of the match.
It seems like there's so many bullet points.
Yes.
Now within the framework, that lovely word, that essentially mean you've got to do so much not to get a red card. The actual surprise is when it's not.
Yeah, you're relieved.
And yeah, you almost get to a point where you're like, right, I've seen 30, just send the bloke off now because this is ridiculous.
It's refereeing by spreadsheet.
Mm.
Have you guys looked at the flowchart?
No, yeah. I will never ever look at a refereeing framework. Unless so, it's before I put it on a bonfire.
So I think you should print it off, look at it, and then stick it on a bonfire. Because actually there's enough there in terms of mitigation for the refs to go, you know what, yeah, this happened and that happened and that happened, to allow you to downgrade it. The problem is, I don't think the refs want to downgrade it. I think they've been given directives not to downgrade things. And it's almost to the point where you're right, the base level is head-to-head with force, you start with a red, and then you see if you can mitigate it down. And I think that's slightly wrong. But
it should go the other way, right? So you, like, if you're mitigating down as a starting point, you're already saying, well, that offence should be a red card. I've got to find a reason for it not to be.
Whereas if you go head-to-head in a tackle, that's a yellow card. It's deliberate with force. We'll mitigate it up to a red. That to me would be fine and would make sense. I just think we're going to be in a situation where actually, so what they want is they want players to hinge at the hips more and get lower. But what happens then? The ball carriers, they then hinge at the hips more and they get lower. So their head's at the same level as the tackling player's head, so they can carry on more force through. Otherwise, they're going to get chopped. And then you're going to get more head collisions. Or the players are going to go in upright and then they're going to be spear tackled and then they're going to be penalties for something else. Or what will end up happening is the players go in upright, the tackler hinges more, and you spend ages looking for the offload, which means that you then come in with a two-person tackle and the second person bounces up and hits the heads. They're trying to legislate their way out of a situation that they shouldn't be trying to legislate their way out of. They should be looking at, actually, what do we do when people get head knocks? Playing rugby is dangerous. Now, I've had some fairly negative thoughts about Alex Popham and the whole kind of CTE thing that's going on, and we're going to sue the RFU. Actually, what they've come out with today is what they want to see is, if you go off for an HIA, it's a minimum 21 days before you can play again. That I can 100% get behind. Let's accept the fact head knocks are going to happen, but you can't have a head knock and be back playing a match 6 days later. Because I suspect that that's what's causing these long-term issues isn't the fact that there's head knocks full stop. It's the fact that they're getting a head knock and then 6 days later getting another one and then 6 days later getting another one. You get them out for a decent period of rest and then they come back in.
So if, like, everything's being changed to mitigate head injury, right? Why aren't mouth guards and head scrum caps, why aren't they mandatory?
Mouth guards are.
No, they're not.
They're not mandatory.
They're not. Carl Sinclair chews gum. Josh McNally told us in an interview that he doesn't wear a mouth guard.
Yeah, but I'd have to check the laws.
Mouth guards are not mandatory.
But they are proven to
reduce concussions and knockouts.
But scrum mouth caps guards
do
are.
Scrum caps do not reduce concussions.
Mouth guards do.
But scrum caps do not. Scrum caps have zero effect on the incidence of concussions.
Yeah, but you know what else is having zero effect on reducing concussions? All the shit law changes they keep making.
Phil's absolutely right. They should be more sharp on getting players off. They should be more sharp on the aftercare. And I've said it 1,000 times now and I'm boring everyone, but they should get rid of games, play less games. But that isn't going to happen because it will cost money. And so will having players out for 28 days. Because if you are going to watch, let's say, Bath play, and Underhill and Faletau are both out with concussions, then you might decide not to bother.
Yeah.
I always thought mouth guards were down to the same as shin pads in football. That actually it's in the law to say that you have to have them, but it's never enforced.
Mate, it's incredible the amount of it. Once you know that players don't wear them, you see it. So many players don't wear them.
Yeah, and they're proven. It's not compulsory. It's just that they're permitted.
It's proven that they reduce concussions and you tend to, you know.
I mean, in terms of the game.
Well brought back, Ben.
thanks, man. to be fair, we've been quite critical of Umaga, but he was brilliant in this game.
Was he?
Well, he created two tries out of nothing.
He was brilliant with the ball.
Yeah, but he didn't have a huge amount to do without the ball. I mean, he got pushed over the line by about three forwards, but then that would happen to most tens, wouldn't it? I thought he played very well. Miles Reed was outstanding for Bath. And I think he's been really good all season.
He has been really good all season. And when you look at the level of back row that Bath have got there in Faletau, Underhill, Bayliss,
Mercer.
I think Miles Reed has been right up there as one of their best performers.
Myself, I don't think there's a huge gap between Sam Simmons and Mercer. I think Mercer's that good. But, you know, he's off. I think Reed is a sort of classic six, gets around, makes his tackles, good in support.
He can handle the ball.
Yeah, so he can.
He's not like a classic six in that.
Well, you know, I mean, he made a try for Spencer, you know, with a support run and a good pass inside. You know, not a surprise that Bath looked a lot better when Spencer came on. You know, Wasps. I think Shields had a good game. Young got two tries. You know,
sure, he played for England.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, he was a little bit unfairly maligned, I think. But yeah, there was an injury for Launchbury, which didn't look great either. So
Lee Blackett said that it's unlikely he'll be appearing in a Wasp shirt for a considerable period of time, which is a real shame.
In the stands watching.
But yeah, I think Bath had probably done enough to win that game up until the card. And, you know, he was always going to get at least the yellow. So you can't complain about the result too much, but you got a feel for the player going down as a red card.
Well, I don't even know where we go from that.
It's also a real shame because Abano had made a massive difference when he came on and was playing fantastically.
Good player.
He is a good player. And it's funny that Bath front row were dominating teams for long periods of time over the last couple of seasons. It looks like Christian Judge has fallen right out of favour, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Worcester, isn't he?
Is he off to Worcester next season? I heard somewhere that fucking Ty Furlong was going to Worcester next season, but that has to be a joke, right?
Ty Furlong needs a new contract, right?
Yeah.
But what other English players? Sorry, this wasn't Zeebo linked with Worcester as well?
Quite probably.
That would seem more likely than Furlong.
Well, he's gone
it?
Back to Munster, but I think it's just a ploy Irish agents use, isn't it? We'll just say they're going to Worcester. Because there's probably no one at Worcester that's checking this stuff out. They probably don't even have a Twitter account.
Just fucking bump Worcester into the mix. They'll have a few quid. They're paying Chris Ashton, for fuck's sake.
Someone at Worcester probably said that there's Tom Furlong who plays for, like, I don't know, Moseley or something. Yeah, we're signing that Tom Furlong. Do you mean Ty Furlong?
Yeah, same one. Yeah.
Where does he play? He's a prop, isn't he? Yeah, it's fine.
Props, are they the big ones?
he's inside prop, isn't he? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Right next to the flyback.
we've managed to get to an hour and 10 minutes and
all we've done is whinge.
We've done, you know, we've validated that review that we had for middle-aged hating on everything.
Much more upbeat last week, wasn't it, Ben?
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
We talked about punching animals.
I didn't like it.
The thing is, last week we had a quite considerable section about animal cruelty and it was still more upbeat than this episode.
And we had some positive feedback from that. the positivity that came through on last week's podcast. And I think we now know, you know, where the demographic is that sits within this. I mean, can you imagine if Doug and I tried to have a chat, just the two of us?
Jesus Christ. A couple of things before we go, though, Russ. Saracens, obviously.
Fuck Saracens.
Pumped Ealing. People saying, oh, this is what Ealing are going to be like. There's eight or nine other Premiership teams that have 40 points put on them by Saracens next season. So let's pipe down on that one, eh? Worcester. Well, I mean, they'd just be eviscerated, Worcester, wouldn't they? Jesus. The other thing I wanted to say about was, did anyone see the Ben sporting a nice Lions hoodie there? Did you see their release of their test jersey this week?
Yeah.
So for the last 3 months, Canterbury have been hawking around for the, and this is the reason I never bought one, a jersey that was the supporters jersey or the tour jersey or something like that. 75 quid, 50 quid if you buy the kids one. It's stand, you know, standard Lions fare. And then last week they bring out the test jersey. Now, Canterbury did that for the New Zealand tour. And we were lucky enough to get hold of one of the test jerseys, and I bought one of the tour, you know, the supporter jerseys, which differed only in that the collar was ever so slightly different and the fit was different, but everything else was the same. The test jersey, I think, was 120 quid because it was all tapered and whatnot. What they've done this year is release a tour jersey for the supporters, which is completely different from the actual Lion shirt. And at no point are they saying, like, yeah, it's visually different. It has different colours on it in different places. So it is a completely separate shirt. It's not just the fit that's different or the sticky bits from the test jersey. It's a completely different shirt. And in their marketing bump, to advertise the product of a £105 Lion shirt, it said that it's constructed from recycled plastic bottles. Now, how many recycled plastic bottles do you need before you've spent 105 quid on them? That's a fucking lot of plastic bottles. Now,
do you mean those free ones that you get at the recycling centre?
Yeah. I mean, you probably have to, you know, put a bit of red dye in with it when you're making it and do your little badge thing. But it is opportunism at its most cynical and disgusting from Canterbury. It's truly disgusting that for 2 months before they, or 3 months before they released this jersey, they were saying that this is the Lions kit. They've got Sam Warburton walking around in it in his in all their marketing stuff. And then 3 weeks before the Lions team's announced, they release a completely different jersey. It's 105 quid. And it not only looks different, but it's at a different price point. It's just disgusting.
105 quid is an embarrassment, isn't it?
Yeah. If you're going to make a cheaper one, at least make it look the same.
Or
I can see Ben price it cheaper. Mate, wasn't going to buy it anyway.
No, if it's going to be different to the normal playing Lions jersey and it's not a test jersey, then make it fucking cheaper. It's different.
Yeah.
Well,
I
was just going to say, still, you know, if you've got four going spare, just send them over.
They ain't giving a shit anymore.
I know.
Now, from what I understand, the Lions contract pretty much bankrupted Canterbury for the New Zealand tour, which is why they stopped giving us free shit, and which is why they stopped making kits for Bath and Leicester and other teams.
England.
But do you know what? Fuck you, Canterbury. That is an outrageous thing you've just done. Like, anyone that bought the 75 quid supporters jersey should get their money back. Like I say, I've bought every Lions jersey since the Matt Dawson one, South Africa. Yeah. And they're all hung up in my wardrobe. This will be the first one I'm not going to get, and I'm a little bit sad about that. Or I'll wait until after the tour and buy it on Level Rugby for 15 quid.
Just before the next tour.
Yeah.
Fuck it, it's just a joke. The cost of things in general is an embarrassment, but it's just, it's companies that fork out so much money to sponsor something in the hope that they would recoup the money from the fans. And ultimately, it's them showing, oh yeah, look at us, we're the kit manufacturers of the Lions. Ultimately, the Joe on the street is going to be the people that pay for it. And I would implore anybody to just boycott buying replica kits for anything, any reason, to be honest.
Do you reckon with no travelling fans, they're going to sell considerably fewer of them? I would expect.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. Good. Because even the bloody warm-up shirt, like the warm-up T-shirts are 55 quid.
So with that in mind, like, if you put into context, I don't know how much it costs to produce a jersey, right? An individual jersey. I can't imagine that it's any more than £50 to produce.
We've all played for rugby teams. We've all played for cricket teams. I can get for my village cricket team, I can get a cricket shirt with Solbury, the logo embroidered on it, and an initial above, or you know, customized, and they're like 25 quid.
So that would tell you
that they probably cost about 10 quid to manufacture.
Yeah. So with that in mind, in a year that there aren't going to be fans traveling to South Africa to support the Lions, right? Why not knock them out for 50? You'd probably make as much money knocking them out at 50 quid a throw on volume than you would at £105 a throw.
Done their maths, but it's
fuck the maths.
It's a nonsense and it drives me mad.
You're driving me mad.
Saints are another one. Bought out a brand new kit this year. It's already 50% off. It's been 50% off in the club shop for the last 6 months. It was virtually the day the season started. They're changing their kits every year now. So
money, and that's all it is.
Bath keep having a big push on social media. 30% off our European strip. We've got another European game coming up, so here's another chance to buy our European strip. So if you haven't bought it yet, you're not going to buy it now just because it's the same price as it was when it first came out, which is 30% off.
Wait until if they make a final. I bet they sell more shirts if they make a European final.
It's a bit mean, though. The game is in trouble of... I don't know. I don't... It just seems like we're not far away from rugby imploding. And I, for one, apart from the work, which I'd miss, I've got a pretty sour taste in my mouth about rugby at the moment, as we all have for the last 6 or 7 months.
Can I just add to that a little bit? So apparently Warren Gatland today has sent out letters to 50 players who are outside of the normal kind of international squads, asking if they're available for the Lions tour this summer.
Did you say
surely 50? The answer's 50, yeah. So, A, surely the answer is going to be yes. Yes, Warren, I am available because I've got nothing, literally nothing else to do with my summer. But also, why is he sending out 50 letters? It's absolutely bonkers.
To people that are not involved in international rugby.
Yeah, so some of the names on the list, Sam Simmons, Hadley Parks, which is a joke, Simon Zebo, Jack Noel, Tuolangi, Reese Webb, Danny Kerr, John Cooney, Joe Marler, George Cruz, Sam Underhill. You don't need to write a letter to Sam Underhill. You just tell him he's in the squad.
Surely you just...
Listen, if Marler and Hadley Parks get in that Lions squad, there is not going to be a table or something between here and Cape Town.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Controversial.
I pick Marla. Oh, you live with Hadley Parks? Fuck off.
When I say I could live with him, like, not in my house, but
no, like, he was average to good in his slight prime of 18 months that he had for Wales. Like, he hasn't played.
Yeah, Ben, I'm going to tell you.
Poor man, Jamie Roberts.
Yeah. I couldn't.
I don't think it's likely, but I could cope.
No.
37th choice New Zealand centre playing for the Lions.
Absolutely couldn't think of anything worse.
Ricky Flutie did all right.
Ricky Flutie. Who was the other Kiwi England centre that was...
You know I can't say it.
Shontayne Hape.
Shontayne Hape. Oh, that fucking Hape.
But 50 is a lot, isn't it? Like, that's not just like...
I mean, that's not an exaggeration, is it?
Like,
that's
like
50 outside of the current international.
Yeah, so... So you're...
All right. We've got those 80-odd players, 90-odd players who I can pick.
He must be right into another 50. Gareth Edwards and people like that.
Yours still must still be in the Gareth. Post, Ben.
Yeah, I haven't got mine. I'm outraged.
I mean, you've got your...
I've even bought some stash, yeah. They could save a few quid there. I've already got a hoodie.
You've just got to write 2021
in previous year's Lions stash. Just bring it, lads. Have you been on a Lions tour before? Bring your stash. Jack, no, I know you were there in New Zealand. You can bring that stash with you. We need to save a few quid.
Just like a red T-shirt from Primark with Lions written on it.
Corey Hill has got some stash if you need it. Oh, wow. Tell you who's not got any stash, Mike Tindall. Anyway, let's move on.
Dylan Hartley,
well, he deserved it.
I think what would be quite a good thing to do instead of a Lions squad would be to pick an all-time Lions diss squad.
Oh, well, like...
should have gone on the Lions.
An alternative that were never Lioned. I mean, that's been done, isn't it? Surely the best...
George Ford.
Well, yeah. Maybe we're... I can only think of Tindall for now. But there are a few. We've done nearly an hour and a half and we've literally achieved nothing. So I was going to ask the Ask MO Anything question that was posed by... Adam Foxcroft.
Should we do it in lieu of any other business?
That's what we'll do. And the question of Phil, you already answered said question.
Yeah, I'll stick with my answer.
But you were being obviously slightly flippant in your response. But the question from Adam was, which celebrity would you like to spend May bank holiday with and what would you do? Phil, do you want to put... You want to answer what you...
I'd love to go for a nice dog walk with James Haskell across some farmers' fields with public footpaths in them.
I mean, don't please...
Show him how to use a lead.
I mean, but why... You know, I'm not going to get into it, but from what I could see, he wasn't doing anything wrong. He walked his dog on some arable land. There weren't any animals. Lots of fucking sanctimonious dickwads that wanted to DM him and tell him what an absolute cunt he was. I mean, that might be...
Nothing
absolute...
to do with the dog.
That might be absolutely true, right? He might be an absolute bellwiff, but...
Hey, look, we weren't there. We don't really know.
No, that's right. But why should people have the right to DM him, calling him a dick and a cunt, and they're going to shoot his dog? What right does that
give? So they're within their right to shoot his dog if they think there's livestock being worried by it. But the point is... that he has a position of relative celebrity and he could have used it for a positive message and he chose to be a knob about it.
People are only upset because he's shut down a few people.
You know what? He could have actually just not even mentioned the whole thing on Facebook or Twitter or wherever it was or Instagram and just gone, you know, something happened, I disagree with him, I'm going to move on with it. But no, he tried to bring himself a bit of attention with it and it backfired on him, which I don't know.
I don't think it backfired on him one bit.
I think he's kind of made light of an issue which he probably doesn't think is serious, but some other people would think is serious. And taking the social media out of it, he'd have been better off just keeping his mouth shut.
Oh, but wouldn't we all? Like, how boring would it be if we all just kept the mouth shut about everything? Ridiculous, in my opinion. The whole situation is ridiculous. Ben, bank holiday weekend. What would you do and who would you do it with?
Ted Hastings.
Oh, mother of God.
And I just
look for Bent Coppers.
Yeah, go after Bent Coppers. Yeah. Interview. I'd just go to the pub and just sit, make people be interviewed by us.
Me and Ted
in the Albion. Everyone that comes in, sit down.
You will be afforded the full protection of the law.
Yeah, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and the wee little donkey.
Amazing. The best British television show ever to be made. Without any shadow of a doubt. It's incredible.
Literally, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Except for Sharp with Sean Bean, obviously.
As opposed to the other Sharp. Doug.
Do you know, he was named after a rugby player.
Was he really?
Richard Sharp, yeah.
Doug,
for formal.
In the current guys I can see you with, you've got a really spectacular mane of hair.
Yeah, need a bit of a cut.
Go on. Bank holiday weekend, what are you doing?
Youth hostelling with Chris Eubank.
You're such a prick because that's the exact same thing that I was going to say.
No.
That's all I wanted to do. I saw a sign for a youth hostel today on the way down to Cape Cornwall. I was like, I just want to be there with Chris Eubank.
But honestly, right now, I wouldn't mind 96 holes. Well, no. 90 holes of golf around Augusta with Tiger Woods would be pretty good.
That'd be nice.
You'd have fully to push, fit Tiger Woods. You'd have to push him, wouldn't you?
Yes. What, is he in his wheelchair?
Very nice.
I reckon you could have him. I reckon you could beat him at the moment. And if you're not quite there, just clip him with the cart just to make sure.
Don't let him drive.
I mean, it's not just the golf. It'd be the extracurriculars that I'd be into.
Taking it to extra home.
I don't know what to do now because, you know, I would like to go on a sunshine villa holiday with
Elodie.
Not with Ben Oddie. I mean, I can't.
From Gladiators.
With Jeff from Gladiators. Incorporating the Millennium Barn Dance. But no, I just like to be somewhere hot and sunny with.
You literally live in Cornwall.
With a 50 year old stunner and use those exact words.
You know what, Russ? I very nearly said I would choose not to go with a celebrity and I'd roll the clock back 3 years and go back to Portugal with you and your missus.
No, you wouldn't.
But then I thought, no, that'd be bonkers.
That would be bonkers. What a ridiculous, ridiculous suggestion. Right, we have literally done an hour and a half and I can't remember a word that any of you have said. So with that in mind, let's get out of here. We'll be back next week. I don't even know what's happening this week. There's some Premiership stuff going on, I think. And
European semis, isn't it?
God, a European rugby week. Oh, God.
Oh, so I'm completely wrong then. It is the European semis, and there isn't any rugby this week. So, with that in mind, we probably won't be back next week, or we might be back next week, and you can do an Ask Maul over anything. And we'll
it's the last one before the Lions squad selection. Do we do a Lions thing?
No. No. Everybody does Lions things, don't they?
Why don't we just get together and chat shit?
Yeah, we'll just arrive.
Send us questions.
For a change.
Send a load of questions.
What are you going to do tonight, guys?
The more questions you give us, the funnier it'll be.
Send us British Lions questions, but think outside the box.
Have we had any more commitments to the Mall Over Invitational?
We've had a few, and we should mention this before we go. We have had a few, also known as WD-40, is committed. I think Guy, who is the French moniker on Twitter that I can't pronounce, but he was Rugby Wobble, who sent in a load of questions from Crediton. He's keen. We've got a lot of keenness, a lot of interest. I know that JB and Tim from the Egg Chasers were keen as well. Doug, you contacted them, so hopefully, you know, we'll see. Like, at the very least, out of all of this, there will be a Nuki second team fixture on that weekend, and the four of us will play. That is the very least of what will happen.
Can't pull out now. We will get 15 people.
Oh, then we absolutely will. I'm not pulling out of anything, mate. The very least that will happen is the four of us will grace a rugby pitch together. I envisage many, many Mall Over fans from all over the country and internationally arriving in Nuki. I'm talking to you, Eddie Stevens.
We do need to source a kit at some point as well. Because I think if we get people to come and play for us, they should probably be able to keep the jersey afterwards.
Do you reckon we could get some sponsorship or a sponsor for that?
No.
I can see what we can do.
Just get a cheap kit. Take it away.
Yeah, I do think that. Your own club socks and we'll provide a shirt.
Yeah.
Cheap.
We'll see what we can do
even
with
if
that.
I have to. Well, I mean, we could get Wabu TV to sponsor it.
There we go. Tax deductible. Say no more. IRS. Irving R. Scheister. Do you remember him from the wrestling days? What a time. Anyway, right, let's go because this is descending into chaos. We will do the Mall Over Invitational weekend of the 8th, 9th of October. Keep it free. This is happening. But do let us know if you're going to come so we can start to plan and if you can help out with accommodation and all that sort of stuff. So just let us know. Anyway, we'll probably see you next week for some really like non-rugby related random chat. If this hasn't been random enough, go well.